all together.
Great. Thanks everyone for being here. It's very exciting for me to share this research with you and to get your feedback, especially academics and the professional community together in the same room. I'm Stephen Wagner. I teach and research here at Brunel, actually, and so a bit selfish for me to keep you all here, but it suits me well. So this is about how wargaming as a research method has actually changed my mind about a few case studies. I teach on an MA in Intelligence and Security Studies here, and that's kind of my bread and butter, actually. Wargaming has always been a side thing, but it's growing, certainly. And part of my teaching, I teach the Case Studies in History module, where we look at examples of intelligence success and failure. And one of my approaches to teaching there has been using war games to both allow students to practice some of their analytic skills from other modules, some more practical focused ones, as well as to actually treat the scenario of the game as an historical case study. And doing that has changed my mind about two different case studies now. The first one, which I've talked about at Connections before, is this game about a crisis of colonial security in Palestine in 1929, where I went in and designed the game with my own biases and my own kind of preconceptions, and basically around a chapter in a book which I wrote that treated the kind of causes of this violence as attributing it to one guy, basically, to, after having played it out six times, completely changing my mind and treating the unfolding of events quite differently. That paper is in draft still. I gotta fix it before I send it somewhere, but it's coming. I'm gonna focus today more on the game I'm currently running. In January, we'll do our fifth iteration of Able Archer, 1983. Outside my area of expertise, I'm not a Cold War person. It's getting harder to tell as I get older, but I was a child during the 80s. so it's really not my thing. In any way, but what I want to show you is that actually wargaming can be, in a certain situation, with certain types of topics, be a very good way into understanding, creating new knowledge, new level of understanding of an historical debate. I think, and I'll kind of prime you with this, I think it requires certain conditions. So we have to be dealing with an entrenched debate between at least two sides, and one where we're not expecting any further empirical evidence, right? Otherwise, what's the point in wargaming it, right? And we have lots of those in history. And so, like with the Palestine game, for example, you had one very ideological debate, basically between Israelis and more conservative historians against Palestinians and more left-leaning historians. About how to attribute the violence of 1929 in Jerusalem versus and other cities, where actually I found myself on moving from one side of that debate to the other. Now, the left wingers were right, turns out, but for the wrong reasons, right? How do I run the game? I'll describe Able Archer in a second. Because it's in the classroom, the students have to do it the way I want. So I don't really have like engagement or immersion problems typically, but they keep a kind of game diary where they're reflecting on throughout the process, are we making the right decision? How did we arrive at this decision? What's going on? And then toward the end, they actually compare notes. They look at each other's material and discuss, okay, how could it be that we went through the exact same event and had completely different or similar perspectives on what happened? So I give them something to write about. And then I actually only mark them on the last bit, the long form, where they get to choose from a set of questions. Those are different now. But basically, that will help them understand the event either as a case study of intelligence success and failure or as some kind of approach to historical research that's novel, you know, using a game to do so. We're looking at, research method-wise, counterfactual analysis as being the core of what we're doing. This is something that all historians say we don't do, but in real life, we actually do it all the time. Anytime you're eliminating a competing hypothesis, you are effectively dealing with a counterfactual. There's no avoiding it. It's something we're not all that honest about. And so all I'm proposing is that this is actually a more structured, more rigorous way to do that, and one which is way more collaborative than most historians are typically used to working. The research, the underpinning research here is coming from more like philosophy and that kind of thing. But the basic idea is the further away you get from true events, the more implausible the scenario, right? The further down the chain of consequential, counterfactual consequential decisions you go, the dumber the story becomes. So what I try to do as the white cell is to kind of keep things close to that line as possible, keep things as plausible as possible, so that when we're doing the analysis at the end, actually we have something worth saying about the result of the game and the decisions made. So we keep that consequential decision chain as short as possible and as close to the line of what we know are true events. And you'll note the kind of similarity that's emerging here between what I'm saying here, what James discussed, what Davey discussed yesterday. So this kind of emerging bubble of connections, I think, of people dealing with epistemology of wargaming. So we'll come back to that. The other thing we're doing when we're wargaming is when we're wargaming history is a more backwards version of a futures exercise in intelligence analysis. I don't know how familiar you are with that. But that kind of diagram in the background is basically how intelligence analysts kind of create scenarios of the future, possible futures, right? Giving you plausible but scenarios that you might need to explore like 10, 20 years down the line, things that you need to prepare for in your deeper budgets that go beyond the current parliament, should we ever be so planful. But we're doing a kind of backwards version of that, right? Where we're looking at what are the key, when designing the game, what are the key drivers of the event? What assumptions are we making? And how might the scenario unfold from there? Okay, it's a similar cognitive process. Able Archer, how have I set it up? It's a double-blind game, so I have Orange, which is the Warsaw Pact, in one room, and usually we do it actually on this floor, and Blue, representing NATO and the US, in another. I'm mediating the information as the white cell, and basically each side is three teams, one political team, one intelligence team, and one military team. And effectively, the real game only happens on the last turn, what they believe is the third to last turn, but is actually the last turn. And that's where I walk into the Soviet team and I say, here's what's going on. For those of you who don't know about Able Archer, this is said to be a war scare in 1983. NATO ran a command post exercise in November that year where they introduced new procedures for a nuclear first strike against the Soviet Union and using new cryptographic techniques and new systems. And it has emerged since then that this possibly brought the Soviets very close to a launch on warning situation. That they were so scared of what they were seeing that they were about to push the button and didn't. This has been treated as a close call. I designed the game around that thesis, by the way, and now I think it's complete bullshit. I think I'm actually on the total opposite side of that because of having played it through. There are scholars, actually, who are also on the other side of it using empirical research, which is great. So that's kind of giving me meat for what will be another paper on wargaming in history. So as I said, the true game actually happens when I go into the Soviet room and I say, here's what you're seeing, here's all the information, what are you going to do? And time after time, so four for four, they look at the kind of the new encryption signal systems, the kind of unannounced command post exercise, the positioning of NATO forces in Europe, and they look at that against the lack of reinforcement and resupply activity over the Atlantic, the lack of general interest or activity in continental United States, and they conclude it's probably nothing, and they don't act. That's generally what has happened four out of four times. And I've struggled the last two times to push Orange to think even a little bit harder about pushing the button, because the indicators are just not there to justify doing it. Which leads me to a kind of revised hypothesis here that actually, as long as the Soviets were rational, I think they were paranoid, to be sure, right? But as long as they're rational, I think their paranoia was also rational. You're dealing with people who survived Barbarossa, on the one hand, and people looking at Reagan and failing to understand him, and his kind of aggressive rhetoric that year. You're dealing with rational actors, they would look at the same information and reach the same conclusions. That's kind of where I've landed for now, and we'll see if I can keep provoking as we go forward. I'm doing at least two more of these. So even though I designed the game on the yes camp, yes, we were close to Armageddon, actually, I've completely, gaming it out has shown me that that's probably an exaggeration. And there's broader implications here. I think, again, this is further evidence that wargaming is a useful technique in historical research. Again, when you're dealing with an entrenched debate, and we're dealing with a situation where you expect no further empirical evidence on the topic. Again, you have to do it the right way. You have to keep, it's boring for war gamers, I think. When I bring in guests, they get a bit bored that I don't allow ridiculous things to happen. Because I think the validity of the game depends on a short chain of consequential decisions, a plausibly short chain of consequential decisions, right? So if things get wildly out of hand long before November 83, the result, regardless of what they decide, means far less to me, right, as a researcher. And the students are still pedagogically getting what they need out of it anyway. So. I don't ever have the immersion and engagement problems because they're being graded on that write-up, which means they have to pay attention the whole time. And the ones who don't suffer tough noogies, I guess. But I do want to present it here, and I'm very open to your feedback on as a methodology itself in research. I think it's a valid method also in the sense that it's better than the intuition of a sole historian who's coming with their biases and kind of without actually talking to other people necessarily, having anchored on the first thing they read. All those kind of normal cognitive biases affect us all, and this is a really great way out of that, which is something I think we all tend to experience wargaming any realistic scenario. What I'm doing next, I don't know. I had that bullet about future plans. I actually don't know what I'm going to do next. It still has to be about intelligence somehow. It has to do some, has to require some exercise and analysis. It still needs to be an historical case study. So if you have ideas about what to do with that, I'm all ears. Thank you for listening, and look forward to your questions.
So I think it's absolutely fascinating.